Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion.
Mike
Spain is in the room, ladies and gentlemen.
Polite golf applause.
And Mike is here.
I'm gonna say something to you, Mike, that's gonna make you feel better. Mike just walked in, but Rosemary didn't show up at all. So you win by default right there. Yeah. So good for you. Let me introduce the panel to you. We'll get Mike settled and comforted. What was there, traffic on the throughway?
Oh, no, it was just Mike Spain stuff.
Okay, Mike Spain stuff. Well, good morning and welcome to the program this morning. Let me introduce Alan Chartok to you. He's here. He's in his place. He's ready to go. He's like shot out of a cannon, ready to talk about today's stories. Good morning, sir.
Just like Quaker Oats.
What?
It's the cereal that's shot from guns.
Shot from cannons, I thought. No,
yeah, was that? Yeah, I didn't.
It was the 1812 Overture, you know?
Oh, I see.
I haven't been on the panel in months, and I can see not a damn thing has changed. It's amazing. It's incredible.
I was going to say, like some old Saturday Night Live colon blow skit. I didn't know what was going on. All right. Ray Graff is with us. It's great
nice
to have
back,
Ray
everybody.
Back.
Thank
yeah,
you.
Very nice. Thank you. And Mike Spain, the associate editor of the Times Union, is with us. And very nice to have you.
Thank you very much.
Now, tell us, Mike, what we're doing on Thursday.
Well, the Times Union is inaugurating its new Hearst Media Center, which is a public meeting place, a town hall type place, and an event space that's in our main building, which is in the Town of Colony at the just off exit 3 of the Northway, the Interstate 87. And
right near the Wolf Road stores, right?
Yes, yeah. right up right
it's
by
got
Wolf
Starbucks
Road.
Right across the street.
Right, Albany Shaker Road, Wolf Road, that intersection.
Jones's Clearinghouse. Right.
Anyway, we're having a visit from WAMC. First, you're going to record the media project.
Right.
And then after that, we're going to do a live roundtable, and the public is invited. There still may be some room. And we have an Eventbrite set up, and you can read about it on TimesUnion.com. Oh,
cool.
There's an item in the paper today about it, et cetera, et cetera.
And so will the media project be live also before an audience?
Yes. People, if they want to come to that, they can come. And so wear something nice.
You know. Wear something nice.
I switched, by the way. I know there's one lady who rides and says, who cares about you, Alan? We don't care about what you dress in and what you look like. But I used to wear ties every day for, you know, like 40 years.
Some nice ties.
And yes, and now I've stopped wearing ties. I took one look at Joe and said, that's the way to do it.
So you're wearing a red turtleneck.
Yeah, red turtleneck covered by a black shirt.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Looks, he's bleeding on the inside.
It's striking.
And laughing on the outside.
That's right. That's exactly it.
Am I done?
Well, anyways. That's Thursday, and we're going to welcome you folks from the WAMC to the Times Union, and the public is invited.
So do the media project, and then if people want to just come from the media project, they can.
They can. There'll be a little time when they can exit and get
out. They want to just come for the roundtable, they can.
They can.
And then we'll do the panel from 9 to...
Oh, terrific. And that's at the Rosebud Room?
No.
That's the Hearst Center?
Yeah. Sorry.
No? The Rosebud Room.
Hey, look, Mike, I'm going to tell you something. I know Rex like a book. I've known him for a long time.
Tell us about it.
I know what's going to happen. We're going to go as a big favor to him, you know, to inaugurate this thing and bring our whole, you know, show on the road.
The honor is ours, right?
No.
And we are greatly honored to have you, Alan.
Then what's going to happen is he's going to say, you know, this worked out so well. We need to do this every week here. And I'm going to say, no, Rex, we are not doing it here every week. This is a one-off, as we say.
Well, there's plenty of free parking at the Times Union. It's difficult around Central Avenue.
Well,
sometimes.
He makes a point.
He makes a good point.
No, he doesn't. I have to say that there's a new deal, so everybody should know it. You know, the Lyndon Norris Auditorium, we used to share it with the Parking Authority.
Oh.
Yeah, but now the Parking Authority and WAMC are splitting ways, and that
there was a divorce?
And that
and that
parking lot will be WAMC's and the one behind.
Well, that will make events at the Linda even more inviting.
I would say so, more inviting than that sort of pristine place you have up there in the, you know.
I didn't say that.
So apparently, there's a competition I wasn't aware of.
There's plenty of room in the marketplace for discussion.
There is not.
Well, we look forward to greeting you on Thursday.
Well, we look forward. You know you're on the panel, right?
Well. I'm happy to be participating.
Rex even is going to be on the panel.
You're kidding me.
It'll be a big panel.
He has not been on the panel in since the new press opened.
When the press opened, that's right. He joined us
Didn't he join you on the event when Mario Cuomo passed away to talk about him?
Yes, I believe he did.
I don't think he stayed.
He did like a Bob Hope, though. He came in and he left in the middle. Yeah, one of those deals. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll get to the stories at hand. We'll be right back after this. What kind of music, Ray?
It's stripper music.
Okay, great.
Oh, I thought it sounded vaguely familiar.
Oh, nice. Might be T-Bone Walker. I don't know who that is.
Good morning. Oh, I thought you were just, Elliot Stripper, a wonderful, wonderful
great lounge musician.
Jazz, but yeah, great. Anyway, Sally Yates was before the, let's try this again. Sally Yates testified yesterday on Monday that she expected White House officials to take action under January warning that then National Security Advisor Michael Flynn could be blackmailed by Russia, offering her first public statements about the national security concerns that rocked the early days of the Trump administration. Yates's testimony to a Senate Judiciary Committee capped months of debate over her role in the ouster of Flynn, a retired general who stayed on at the White House for 18 days after Yates's warning. Meanwhile, we also learned yesterday that one Barack Obama, former President Obama, warned Donald Trump in the days during the transition against hiring Michael Flynn to be part of his national security team. He met with his successor in the Oval Office 2 days after the November election. The two former Obama administration officials said that Mr. Obama, who had fired Mr. Flynn as the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, told Mr. Trump that he would have profound concerns about Mr. Flynn becoming a top national security aide. What do we make of these two stories?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, the fact that Trump is tweeting the way that he is this morning, sounding sort of mad, to be honest with you. Mad as an angry and mad as a madman, is tweeting all over the place that it's old news, who cares, you know, it doesn't matter, it's a phony story. And what I find interesting is he didn't leave any room for the Senate Republicans. He didn't give them any protection about why they were conducting this investigation, because after all, that they wouldn't be there if the Senate Republicans didn't decide they had to do it. So that I found extraordinary. It also looks like Flynn is, what I'm afraid of with Flynn is that he's going to become a sort of a scapegoat for the other guys. Because I think that Trump has a lot of explaining to do, and I think that stuff is going to come out about his relationship with the Russians, and that Flynn becomes a very convenient guy to be the fall guy. Now, what was interesting is when he said, okay, well, I'm willing to testify, but only with immunity.
Flynn.
That's right, when Flynn said that. So I don't exactly understand what all of that means, other than it gets more and more interesting all the time. And I do believe if Trump goes down, it's going to be over the Russians.
Yeah, one of the fascinating aspects of this story is that 2 days after he was elected, Donald Trump was elected president, President Obama warned him to stay away from Flynn. I'll bet that cinched the deal for Flynn. if Trump had any hesitation about appointing Flynn as his national security.
Now, do we have a transcript of what was actually said by then President Obama to the president-elect?
Those are private conversations.
In other words, you hear one thing that says, you know, Obama more than strongly intimated this guy is a security risk. You hear another one saying, well, I'm really not too fond of this guy. So I'd love to know what was actually said before we draw too many inferences.
Right. But that was a point where Trump was certainly emboldened, having just been elected, and I'll thank you very much. I'll do just what I want, and it probably just motivated him even more to appoint Flynn, even if there were some signs that Flynn was a problem.
Unless, and there is a fascinating possibility here. No matter what Ray says, there is a possibility here that since there are those who suspect that Trump, who came in yelling about how great Putin was and how great the Russians were, and he wanted to make peace with them and all of that, and now we hear from one of the sons something that has been disclaimed. They say they didn't say it, but that they got all this Russian money for their golf clubs. That of course raises the specter of something which would make Trump so annoyed that he would get on the Twitter this morning and just not stop. Now he doesn't like. And I've never understood this. He didn't like Barack Obama. That's clear. He's called him every name in the book.
Well, Obama does not like Trump, and he made that clear about four years ago during the campaign. White House Correspondents' Dinner, where he used Donald Trump, who was in the audience, as a punching bag and made a lot of jokes, like orange is the new black. Well, I don't know. He made something about his hair and et cetera, and made a lot of jokes about Trump, and Trump walked out angry, and it seemed like that was when he decided to run for president.
Well, he doesn't like Trump. Trump is a difficult character. He doesn't have impulse control, and that's something you worry about when you see a president tweeting and demeaning himself virtually every day. And next to the tweet button is the nuclear button.
Well, the thing about this too is the question about. What about the vetting process? And so now we get into a question of one of the things that Trump is saying now in his tweets is, he was vetted by the Obama administration, so it's Obama's fault that he was a part of the Trump administration, which doesn't make too much sense given that he was fired from the Obama administration.
Right, and my question is, and I apologize for not doing my homework. I found out I was on the show at 8:55 today, so I didn't look this up. But when...
Somebody get me my violin.
Did he lose his security clearance, or did he still have his security clearance?
He retained it.
Under the Obama administration.
According to the story in the Washington Post.
Okay, so that begs the question of why,
that. Yes.
If there were such grave reservations about him, why did he not lose his security clearance before the President Obama left office?
I don't know what the procedure is to strip somebody of their security clearance. If you fire them from a key security position, that usually takes care of it. It's implicit that they may still be trustworthy, but they're not doing a good job. I mean, perhaps that's one of the explanations. I don't know the dynamic. I don't know that if you're fired as an... Does he have it now? I don't even
That's
know.
My question.
Yeah,
I'm sorry I didn't do my research. Yeah. Alan, I'm sure you had the notes beforehand.
Oh, sure.
What's the answer to that?
I forgot.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it's a problem. Flynn is a problem, and what this has done is it has brought Russia back as an issue because that had kind of dropped off. Don't you think, Alan?
Yeah. No, I think Russia is the big bear here. I do. Yeah. Obama clearly warned him. But
that would have little – that would carry little weight with the newly elected
president. Well, then that was stupid of Trump.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, he also warned him, I believe, on – I don't know if it was in that meeting or maybe it was on inaugural day, the toughest thing you're going to have to deal with isn't the Mideast. It's North Korea. And he seemed to not accept
that. We'll handle that.
Yes, that's another
– Sure, you will.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're getting some notes from people about the idea that it's still a president. It is the Defense Department's job, not the president's job, to strip someone of their security clearance. So,
still the Obama administration, I think, is the point they're making.
Yes. Well, let's try it this way. Now Flynn has offered to testify if he's given immunity. So what is he bargaining for here? In other words, if he
immunity.
Says, no, we know he's bargaining for immunity, right? But what does he have to offer either the senators or the prosecutors or anybody else if they give him immunity? The possibility here is that he knows more about Trump than people might want to understand. And if that's so, give me my immunity and I'll talk to you about that, which is why Trump doesn't want to strip
him. So you think he is going to sing?
Yeah, I think it's a possibility he could sing, yeah.
He could be a
to
John
save
Dean.
Himself, to save himself. Well, no, but John Dean did it because he had to do it. I don't know that he had immunity. In fact, I think
he
got
to prison.
Jail,
yeah,
right?
He did go to jail.
Yeah, so maybe that's what's going on here. you know, when people fire people and do things like that, they always wonder, okay, what's this guy going to do when he gets out? You know, is he going to throw me under the bus?
Like, and when you fire me?
And you leave. I will never fire you, Ray. And I'm saying that right here.
I've all heard it right here.
I know that.
You are one of the most important cogs in our very important machine here.
Interesting.
Yeah. You'll never be fired, ever. You can write that down.
Okay. That's a kiss of death. Well, time for a break.
I'm sorry. What about me?
He was very quiet. He needs immunity before he answers that question.
Nor you, Justin.
Thank you.
Nor you.
Want to get that into the vault before for both of us, Ray, just to make sure. Let's take a break. We'll be, and you're not on the payroll, Mike, so you're safe.
I'm safe.
we're getting rid of Rosemary. But
yeah. I think she got rid of you guys.
Yeah, that's right. She fired us. We'll be back after this. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Shartok, Ray Graff, and Mike Spain make up the group this morning. Ray Graff filling in for Rosemary Armeo, who was supposed to be here, but missed her train.
Exactly.
So it's stop just, writing to us that we're against women. We're not having women on the panel.
Didn't you have three on the panel yesterday?
Well,
that doesn't matter. Apparently,
on average, you're doing fine.
But anyway, I'm here under protest, just so everyone knows. And I apologize for not having fallopian tubes.
Dead silence falls on the group.
A rare moment.
You know, I'm sorry about that, too.
Yeah. Well, you know,
all right.
It is what it is.
Okay, so here we go. In other words, we're proving their point, right?
Ah, oh, come on. Everybody's just got to lighten up. I have had enough.
I'm with you, Ray.
Okay.
Good Lord.
I'm with you, Ray.
Let's talk about the South Korea elections, if we can. A look at some pivotal issues. The South Koreans began the process of selecting a new president on Tuesday in a vote that will turn on several crucial issues, relations with North Korea and the United States, economic inequality, and the enduring power of the country's family-controlled conglomerates known as cable? CHAEBOL. What do you think, Mike?
I would say you got it.
Okay. here's how these issues. So obviously the big issue is handling North Korea and what to do there. There's also dealing with us,
yes.
The U.S. relations, of the defining issue of dealing with us.
The liberal guy doesn't want us and doesn't want our missiles surrounding him.
The terminal high-altitude area defense system.
That's the one.
And then, of course, corporate corruption, and finally, economic inequality. So as we look at this election and as the campaign goes, it's interesting that how much of the campaign really centers on the neighbor to the north.
Well, that's right. You know, one of the things this liberal fellow, the liberal candidate who's 20% ahead in the polls and who probably won, will know.
He won 41% at last I heard on the BBC at the bottom of the hour.
Moon Jae-in.
Is that enough?
It was enough here.
No, I know. But in some countries, there are runoffs and things like that. That's why I was asking that question, Raymond. Nevertheless, he did say he wanted to sit down with the North Koreans, number one. Number two, they don't like Trump very much in South Korea. And that is another impetus for this whole thing. He was opposed to the sort of ruling clique that has ruled South Korea for so long. I'm astounded, by the way. I really am. That they got this lady, they impeached her, and now they're trying her. And he says, by the way, that he will not pardon her. So the whole idea that this little country is capable of policing itself that way and impeaching is fascinating. And, by the way, taking the chairman of, what is it, Samsung? Is it Samsung?
Yeah, the biggest
itself,
company
in South Korea. And saying he's next. That's almost revolutionary.
This from 2 minutes ago, BBC reporting that according to the exit polls, that Moon Jae-in is on the course to win. The country's three major broadcasters got together to do the exit poll.
Yeah.
And that's what they're showing, although none of this has been made official.
Okay.
What I haven't seen is, how old is this gentleman?
I will try to find that out.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely is a country where the younger generation is taking over, very well-educated, but largely, you know, with a high unemployment rate. It's largely employed, but it's got a high unemployment rate. And, you know, it's a very different country than the country that was engaged in the Cold War since the mid-50s till recently with North Korea at their border. And as you were saying, they're not crazy about Trump. I think there's a fear among some in South Korea that Trump will antagonize Kim Jong-un in North Korea and cause him to take some drastic action that will only adversely affect South Korea. I mean, and
China and Russia and everybody else and Japan.
And there is that thing called Japan, yeah.
Yeah, and it probably won't affect the United States so much. And that's not popular. That's not a popular thing.
Moon Jae-in is 64 years old.
Okay, so he's not a millennial.
A mere child.
But he couldn't have been elected without participation of
the younger voters.
And I think the voter turnout was tremendous. It was like
77%, according to the BBC this morning.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Only we could have that here.
Interesting that it was either BBC or Morning Edition, but they were talking to the South Koreans, and they're not really that concerned about the North Korean situation.
It's so interesting because I've mentioned on the show, we had a South Korean deputation of journalists and others who came here, and I'm on the State Department tour. We are, and I had to talk to them, and I asked that question, Ray. I said, you know, you're worried about this, and they all just shrugged it off.
Yeah, more concerned about the economy and jobs and things like that.
Right, and he's pledged, this new president or apparent new president had pledged to create like 800,000 jobs to help fill the gap that a lot of young people have these great educations and are unable to find work. Mm. So it's, it's more economic. It's more about jobs and issues at home than it is about worrying about the border.
But if there is to be the equivalent of a Reichstag fire here in the United States, I'm assuming it's going to be over North Korea. I think that's where...
It's a pretty grim prospect.
Yeah. Well, it is. Mm. What are you looking so puzzled?
I'm not sure I follow this. Now,
Reichstag fire.
In other words,
what's the prediction here? What is our prediction?
I was talking about a guy named Schneider yesterday. He's a distinguished history professor at Yale University. Don't you know? One of the best in the country.
Yeah, sure. Down in Connecticut way.
That's the one. And this guy has written extensively on the Holocaust. He's done for Salon.com a very persuasive article, which basically says, if you were going to pull a coup, this is the kinds of stuff you would have to do. And one of the things you'd have to do is have some event, a 9/11 or something like that, that you could then organize behind. Now, am I saying it's going to happen? Even he didn't say it would happen. He said all of the things are in place for that to happen, and we'll see. Look, this is a guy, right? Sorry to go off on this, but wasn't this a guy who said that the election was going to be rigged? President Trump, do you remember that, Ray?
No, I do.
Okay. He said it was.
He said it more than once.
Yeah, he said it a lot. And if an election is going to be rigged, and then when he won, it wasn't rigged, and the polls were rigged. Remember, the polls were rigged. And now, when we come to the next election in 2020, the question is, will that election be, quote, rigged, according to him? And will he therefore take action? I don't know. But these are all points that are made in this. I recommend this, SnyderSalon.com.
Okay.
Well, the only thing I can say is that we were all vastly wrong in our predictions that we sat here and made a year ago. So who knows?
Not all.
Oh, sorry. You said it was possible that Trump could win. Am I right?
Of course you're right.
Yeah.
But, give me credit where credit is due, please.
Okay. The rest of us were all wrong, and you were not.
I get it. Thanks, Mikey.
Ready for a break?
No, I'm ready for Rosemary to call in.
All right, we'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We have letters. We have lots of letters. Let's go to those and talk about them and find out what's on your mind. Alan.
And how do you send a letter again?
panel at WAMC.org.
Yeah, okay. Dear panel, is there a way to better attack Trump's insistence that the old news about Flynn being a risk is in fact very serious and dangerous? It appears that the Trump typical tweet storm will be effective in wearing down this material until it sort of just goes away like so many other problems. And that's from Stephen, and you know where he's from? Brooklyn, New York.
All right.
More and more people are listening to us on the net and say, we prefer this radio station to others. And so we listen every morning on the app. You go get the app. You know what I mean? Okay. Jim says, as far as I know, background checks for security clearances are done by the FBI. The White House does not hand out security clearances, and the White House, as far as I know, cannot revoke security clearances. The White House is doing its usual deflect and distract tactic anytime a new story about their gross incompetence arrives, and that's from Jim. Okay. All right. Anybody have anything to say about that?
No, Jim. Thank you.
Hi, Jim.
Good point.
Good morning, Jim.
Alan says, Flynn was required to reapply for his security clearance to be the national.
So he had to reapply.
Advisor.
Okay, there's the answer.
The CIA never completed that process.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Well, it was probably underway. That takes a long time. And he was gone before it got done, perhaps.
Okay, and then we heard from Robert, who said, check out the video from yesterday's hearing for a good explanation of the security clearance issue. You'll find that the DIA fell asleep at the wheel and that there were two levels of security. The second, more invasive one, should have been done when hired by the new administration, and that's from Bob in Milford.
Okay.
We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Mike, you've got a story to share with us from the pages of the Times Union this morning.
Well, I think the story that many people are talking about today is the verdict in the tragic case in Lake George. It's been going on, the trial of, I just want to make sure I get the names all right here. Anyways, the trial completed, and the a Warren County jury has found Alexander West guilty of some of the charges for which he was charged, and did not find him guilty on some others. But he still has been convicted of serious crimes, including criminally negligent homicide, boating while impaired, reckless operation of a vehicle, cocaine possession, and leaving the scene of a crash, and second-degree assault. And that all relates to a tragic accident last summer on Lake George where a 8-year-old girl who was visiting her family and out on a boat with her grandfather and her family was killed when West's the boat piloted by West crashed into it, and it cost the girl her life and injured the girl's mom. And this trial has been going on, and it's really been focusing on whether whether the defendant had been consumed, substances that left him intoxicated, and that seemed to be the crux of it. What the jury did not get to hear is that a blood test that was taken after he was taken into custody following this tragic accident showed that he did have alcohol and marijuana and other illegal substances in his blood, but they were not allowed to see that.
And do we know why?
Yeah, they weren't allowed to see it because they didn't properly get a warrant before they drew the sample.
Interesting. Now, I know his defense attorneys are saying there will be an appeal, or there at least is a ground that they see for an appeal. Have you heard anything on that?
No, other than that Cheryl Coleman, the defense attorney in this case, said immediately that they would appeal the verdict. And the district attorney says that this shows that, they basically feel they have won it. But the outcome of it is a very interesting one. This all happened the evening after a big event that happens on Lake George every year called Log Bay Day. And the district attorney in Warren County, Kate Hogan, said that essentially it's over. They're not going to allow that anymore.
Was that an informal thing?
Yeah, it was a side thing where she was asked about it during the press conference following the West verdict. And she said that, it's no more. It's over.
Literally. No, I mean, was Log Bay Day an informal thing?
Oh, yeah. People would put it out on social media. People would go to a shallow area along the lake, Log Bay, and they would often bring, you know, coolers full of beer. There was, as this trial demonstrated, there were people smoking marijuana and smoking hashish, and other drugs were available and being traded and sold, and people were using them, including, according to the jury and the verdict in this case, Alexander West. And the authorities, state police go in and the sheriff's department goes in and they catch people boating while intoxicated and they give a lot of tickets out. But now there's an effort to completely drop this. People associated with the Lake Park Tourism, the Lake Park Commission, the sheriff's department, state police all want to see it go on. And I don't know how you stop people from congregating, yes. But I think that it's going to be very different situation this year.
My question is, does this conviction potentially open the door to a civil suit against the municipality and the law enforcement agencies? I mean, you knew they were selling hashish and marijuana. Did they? And why didn't they stop it? So if I'm a civil attorney, I say there's a lot of culpability to go around here.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. That would be, I presume, the family of Charlotte McHugh, who would have to make a case like that. I don't know if there's merit for that. Illegal activity was going on. Police were issuing tickets. They were coming in, but it would take an army to probably catch everybody doing everything. It's like a rock concert. You just can't control everything.
Well, but driving anything while intoxicated is a crime that has frequently been, obscured. I mean, people don't really get the punishment they deserve. And what I mean by that is that we see it in Western Massachusetts, in the Great Barrington area, all the time. Somebody's driving while intoxicated, and they get a slap in the hand. And if they really get prosecuted, they get a couple of years. They don't get what
if there's like a fatal accident associated with it. I think, yeah.
But to me, anybody who drives while intoxicated should be put in jail and for a while.
Okay, so then, getting back to my question, then so-and-so is involved in an accident and is loaded, came from a bar. Civil suit against the bar. That's my question.
Happens all the time.
It does happen. It's a crime to serve somebody who's intoxicated in New York State. If you're a bartender and someone orders more, and if you provide that with them when they look inebriated and you believe they're inebriated, that is a crime, and it could come back to haunt the institution, the business, really.
Well, there's no question that bars, at least in Western Massachusetts, on a fairly regular basis, lose the right to serve booze for a while because they screwed up.
Well, parents are responsible if they are serving, if alcoholic beverages are provided and an accident happens. Same thing with even adults supporting.
Right. Well, I don't know. If you had a barbecue in the backyard and everybody was over 21 and somebody had too many beers and they drove off and had an accident, would you be culpable in that?
I think if you knew that they were...
If you continued to provide alcohol knowing that they were intoxicated,
yes.
And then you let them drive. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, it would have to, I'm sure it would be a contentious civil suit.
Hard thing to prove.
Yeah, it would be difficult. Yeah, because when you're over 21, you take a certain responsibility also for your actions. As far as your suggestion, Ray, I have not
heard. It wasn't a suggestion. It was a question whether it's even possible.
That it's a possibility. Yeah. I mean, I think it certainly is. You can sue anybody for anything. Whether it would have merit and how far it would get would really depend on and how persuasive the attorney making that case would be.
Well, we're very lax in this country. Very lax about drunk driving.
Yeah. I mean, there's periods where we become diligent about increasing the penalties and not letting plea bargains take place, et cetera, et cetera. And some jurisdictions are more rigid. Of course, you remember the late Doris Aiken back in the 1980s, who was like a one-person lobby.
Mad.
Right. Well, no, hers was...
RID.
RID, Remove Intoxicated Drivers. And it was very similar to Mad Mothers Against Drunk Driving and was very effective in bringing to the public's attention the risks of letting people who were... And she cited case after case after case of people who had been convicted of drunk driving, allowed or pled down after being charged with drunk driving, and they go out on the road and they kill somebody, and she'd hold a press conference and point it all out. So our tolerance of that seems to wax and wane, and I think cases like this in Lake George bring it to
the
forefront.
That's different.
But still, it's operating a motor vehicle, whether it's a boat or a car or a motorcycle, while you're impaired. And that's something that I think because of cases like this is less tolerated, and district attorneys will be more diligent about prosecuting and not negotiating.
Of course, I'm a total teetotaler, so I have no tolerance.
You lifted a glass of champagne
almost stumbled off the stage.
Did you have a glass of champagne at the Rosemary?
I did.
Roast?
Yeah, I did. I did.
I wish I was there to see it.
All right, letters.
Good morning, panel. Trump doesn't like Obama, and Obama doesn't like Trump. Guys, your blind spot is showing. Trump tapped into the country's racism with his birther campaign. It was hateful. It was a lie. Trump is a liar and cashed in on the country's hate. It took him all the way to the White House. Stop with the false equivalencies. And that's from Barbara. Barbara, I take great exception to your letter, one of many. But I take great exception to it because this is what we call setting up a straw man and then knocking it down yourself. You say, guys, your blind spot is showing Trump tapped into the country's racism with his birther campaign. Okay. Oh, and you said, good morning, panel. Trump doesn't like Obama and Obama doesn't like Trump. That's the false equivalency. First of all, you put those words in our mouth. I don't know that we said that one thing, one didn't like
the other.
Well,
I may have said that.
Yeah,
I think it's a
fact.
But
I didn't say it.
Neither.
Yeah, I didn't say it.
Neither likes each other. But
take it back.
What Trump did with that, he detested Obama was completely inappropriate. Obama was more measured in his response. He spoke against him during the campaign.
He's been very, very soft on Trump. He could be. Trump keeps yelling and screaming how terrible Obama is. Anyway, hi, panel. If Rosemary were on the panel today, we would be hearing about how great, in capital letters, Sally Yates was yesterday. She was together and competent and answered questions factually and even pointedly at times. She wasn't going to be pushed around by the likes of Cruz and other Republicans who only wanted to do Trump's tweet bidding. Hooray for Sally Yates, says Betsy. If I had a grandchild, I'd hope it would be named after her. Well, in my house, we don't get to name our grandchildren. You know what I mean?
You make a point.
Yeah.
Interestingly about Sally Yates, though, she also really would have none of it when there was grandstanding by the Democrats. I mean, Al Franken... It was like a filibuster, a long, one endless sentence, and she's like, not going to touch that. She did a good job, I thought.
Well, but she said not going to touch that, but she knew what she was doing.
But I'm saying she did a very good job.
She did. Is it time for another one or not?
Yes.
Okay, Kate says, good morning, panel. So we are discussing the Michael Flynn fiasco and the congressional members that refused to meet with. And now this is profound because she spells the word meet. I don't want to pick on her, but M-E-A-T, because I think it may be significant here.
And deliberate.
To meet with constituents that elected him, Faso and Stefanik, for example. Why don't we have better vetting process for those folks? Trump et al. Are so worried about immigrants coming in, and yet those of us who live here have to deal with these crooks and dishonest politicians and appointees. Why aren't we vetting the two top presidential and VP candidates for medical and mental wellness, releasing their financial information at all? As far as congressional members go, why aren't they also undergoing the above as well for signing statements to say that they are there to represent their constituents? I guess I'm just a naive voter, and thanks from Kate.
Thanks, Kate.
We have primaries. People put themselves up in this country.
It is interesting, though, the vetting that goes on. I mean, we know a lot about Donald Trump. There's a lot of details we don't know about him. But you remember when Gerald Ford was the new president and he got to select and recommend a vice president and put that nomination before the Congress. Nelson Rockefeller was nominated to be his vice president, and he had to get up and explain before congressional hearings, you know, how he was putting his finances into blind trusts, and he had to promise all this. He had to expose a lot of his own personal financial information to the Senate before he was approved.
I remember it very well. Things have changed.
Yeah.
But, of course, you have to buy the premise. In other words, you have to buy the premise that you're supposed to do this stuff. Donald Trump has not done that.
And he's the new president.
All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to pause for news. We will be back and continue our conversation. Mike Spain is here. Ray Graff, and of course, Alan Chartok is at the table, ready to go. I told you you were shot out of a cannon today.
Just like Quaker Oats.
Ray, we'll be back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Tuesday morning, the 9th of May, 7 minutes past 10 o'clock. We welcome Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, and Mike Spain to the roundtable this morning, and it's very nice to have you all with us. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We'd love to hear from you. Panel at WAMC.org.
Joe, I wanted to mention that today at 2 o'clock, John Faso will be on our air, we think, right?
Vox Pop today with you.
Yeah, Vox Pop. People can call in at 1-800-348-2551 and have a conversation with him.
Yeah, and you know, it's best to call a few minutes before, too. Get in line. It'll be a while before the show actually begins. It'll start about 2:07, maybe.
Right.
Well, enjoy that one.
So don't be telling me, why don't you ask him? You ask him. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Keep it clean, though. We have an 8-second delay.
We have the
if
red button.
If you go over the line,
we
bam.
We have the red button.
Yeah.
And we'll have you arrested if you...
No, we won't.
Oh, no, we won't.
Are you going to get... I love when you give the civility lecture.
Yeah, civility. And then I get letters about, with this guy, we don't want civility. You know, people criticizing me. I wrote a very tough column about John Faso, by the way. Very tough column. And guy says, you never said anything negative. I say, read my column. Does he write back? No. Was I wrong? No. Do I want to go in a sewer hole and put my head down here? No.
Well, you're
seconded.
you're expecting some harsh critics to call in, and he'll be here to respond.
Yeah.
That's a gutsy move.
Well,
good for him.
Not only that.
I think it's something you would expect of your congressperson, don't you think?
You would expect more. You would expect him to have town meetings, but he doesn't. That's his choice.
Hmm.
But if he's willing to come on here and take questions from our audience?
It's a little after the fact. I mean, people can call him up and they can berate him for supporting the American Health Care Act, and he can tell you
why
he did.
Well, on that issue, but they can push him on other issues.
Well, that's true. There's other. That's right. He will be voting on other issues. He'll be approving up to 100 new mid-level court judges. He'll be. I guess that's the Senate that does that.
Yet.
That's right.
You're not there
that's
yet.
Right. You're not there yet. that's a good point.
All right, so let's go to this story, which I'll admit I picked just for Alan. This is, I know he likes to talk about
this. He does. He likes to talk about living forever. Yeah.
Life expectancy is rising overall in the United States, but in some areas, death rates are going conspicuously in the other direction. These geographical disparities are widening, according to a report published Monday in JAMA, Internal Medicine.
And in Pennsylvania, it's pajama.
Life expectancy is greatest in the high country of central Colorado, but in many pockets of the United States, life expectancy is more than 20 years lower, according to the report from the University of Washington's Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation.
Can we make any inferences from this?
We can.
Right.
Look, the people who get good medical care live longer. You read the article, they're going to tell you that. The people who get good medical care live longer. So up comes, pops the, in my head, the congressman who yesterday got into all kinds of trouble at the at his forum, his public forum. He defended himself as saying nobody ever died, from lack of health care. And the audience booed him yelled at him. Because, yes, people do die because they don't get proper health care. Look, those of us who have colonoscopies, and I've had my share in my life, more than you wanted to know, but more information than you wanted to know. Ray's shaking his head.
No.
Yes.
Yeah.
This
but
half hour feels like one.
But okay, so no, if you have a colonoscopy, they're going to find whether you have polyps or not. It's that simple. You don't find them, they grow into something bigger, you get cancer, you die.
Right. Diagnostic testing for things like cancer and then early identification and treatment of these are seen as one of the reasons why people who have more health care survive. According
to
this.
Yeah. According to this map, those who live in Albany County have the best chance of living to 85 years of age.
Wow.
Whereas those in my county of Washington County, 75.
Huh.
Berkshire County?
I have no idea.
75.
You're overdue.
I'm a walking dead man.
75 to 80. It would be 75 to 80.
He's got a few years.
Yeah,
he's good.
And then.
That's an average.
Lights out.
It's an average, Alan.
It's an average.
Yeah, it's
fine. Yeah. Well, I know.
And then.
But I'm not a well man.
South Dakota has the lowest, 67.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So this is based on...
Rex comes from South Dakota.
I thought Kentucky was on a bad list, too.
I don't see that here, Mike, but you may be right.
Fine.
Well,
yeah.
there are a bunch of places. You know, when you look in Texas, it averages from about 70 to 75. Florida, in the...
No comment.
The tip of Florida, looking down on Miami, yeah, that's 80, 85 years.
Yeah.
So,
does the weather have any? I know exercise, availability of health care.
Okay, listen, here it is. Don't smoke.
Oh, God. Here we go.
What? We know this, right, Ray?
No, we do,
don't
sir.
Don't smoke.
We do.
You smoke, you're going to be in big trouble. Exercise, walk an hour every single day.
That's a long walk.
Yeah, it is.
Well, that's too bad. You want to live, then you do it.
You make it one way.
Do what I tell you. Otherwise, you know, you're going to die. So
we're all going to die.
Well, yeah, but the question is when, and that's why Joe raised this entire question.
So
let me reiterate, Ray. Don't smoke.
Fine.
So I see what you're talking. I see what you were talking about, Mike. That in Kentucky, they had one of the largest decreases. So they
in
went
life expectancy.
In life expectancy went down
since 1980. That was a big problem. Yeah.
Do we know why?
Bourbon.
No, it's not the bourbon.
No, there's dry counties in Kentucky. You can make
seriously,
it, but
why,
you can't drink it.
Why the big drop? Have we found out? Has everybody decided not to exercise?
I'm currently playing with the interactive map of death, and yes, that's what it's called.
You're kidding me.
Interactive
map. I've called that my career for a long, long time.
Well, go into New York City.
Yes, yeah, so New York City actually went up, right? Yeah. They went up 10 to 15%.
The borough of Manhattan did very
look
well.
Look how pretty
and
this
Brooklyn.
Map is.
Not Queens, Staten Island, or the Bronx, but Brooklyn and Manhattan did better.
In that map, Joe, there's a lot of yellow areas in the southwest, or not quite southwest, but central southwest. What do those yellow areas indicate?
I'm looking to find that out.
Ah, we don't know.
Yeah, because this map is more detailed than the other map I had. So this gets into male and female as well. So, you know, breaks it up between.
And anybody wants to find it, they find it in the Times, right?
New York Times.
Yeah.
And or healthdata.org, the other place to find it.
Yeah.
All right. So
the upshot is, Shark Talk, you got like 3.5 years left.
I don't know what I have, but it's not enough.
Okay.
Well, that's the right attitude. I mean, wanting to live longer, you do the things that it requires, like you walk an hour a day. You cut back on excessive...
smoking.
Yes.
Drinking.
Yes. And what kind of diet do you maintain? A low-fat diet?
Well, I do. I've been on every diet known to mankind, but right now I eat nothing white. Nothing white. Jeannie Hunter came in yesterday with a chocolate cake.
Oh, it looked good.
Well,
it was
white.
Good, and I ate some,
good
and
for
I
you.
Suffered at night because I had heartburn.
Hmm.
I don't know. Would that be caused by the cake?
No.
I don't know. That
I went off my diet
cake.
A lot. It was almost worth it, but it wasn't worth death.
So
the heartburn was
the
caused by regret.
The things that you avoid are sugar, white rice.
Sugar, white rice.
Flour, white flour.
White flour.
Bleached flour.
Wheat flour. Do you stick to this diet, Mikey?
I think...
Mikey.
I think I don't. I think I like sugar... I like brown sugar, so there.
Yeah. Come on. Sugar, 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 sugar.
All right. Let's switch. We have about, how many minutes do we have, Ray?
We have 7 minutes and 43 seconds if you're scoring at home.
So we'll get serious in a second and talk about the story regarding the Trump administration considering a major shift in strategy in Afghanistan, including an increase of at least 3,000 troops that would effectively put the United States back on a war footing with the Taliban. This was announced yesterday and reported in this morning's Washington
Post. Another campaign pledge by Trump that he is disavowing. He said he wasn't going to do that.
Well, it shows how he has changed a lot of his points of view now that he sees things from the inside
looking out. In fairness, every president learns things they didn't know. But now what is the rationale for increasing the troops?
Then he could keep shut. You know what I mean? You're running for office. You want to win, and you say things, and you should keep shut.
That's not how you run for office. You've seen people run. Then nobody who runs for office keeps shut. You know this is true, right?
This is, to get to your question, Ray, it's responding to the military advisors. Military advisors who are recommending this, and this shows that he's surrounded by generals. And he's listening to them. The Pentagon will be running the war, won't be run from the White House. It won't be like President Obama, who was extremely reluctant to commit any new troops there and was trying to basically get out of there by the end of his presidency.
What's the end game for the generals or for the advisor or for the Trump administration here? Do they want to stamp out ISIS, stamp out the Taliban?
Well, the Taliban. Resurgent Taliban. And the plan comes at the end of a sweeping policy review built around the president's desire to reverse worsening security in Afghanistan and, quote, start winning again, said one U.S. official, who, like others, spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss internal deliberations.
Right. And there is some dispute within the White House, according to this story. Some people are angry at the new national security head, H.R. McMaster. He's the guy who took the job after Flynn bombed out. And he's very much in favor of this, and others are against it. There's some tension in the White House, according to this story.
Interesting.
Yes.
Interesting.
All right. Alan has letters.
Okay, I have letters. Is there a problem, or is it just business as usual? I imagine, it says, please talk about Kushner's sister in China. Is there a problem, or is it just business as usual? I imagine if Obama's family members peddled influence like that, there would be no end to the howls of outrage from the GOP and Trump supporters.
Well, we discussed the story yesterday at great length.
We did. That was good.
Okay.
Paul said, do you think, that's L. Paul, do you think that there's even the slightest possible, coup d'etat? Do you think this is even slightly possible? There are almost as many people against the sitting POTUS as for him. So where will the support come from? Today's military will not support their leadership in an overthrow of the country. The thinking is different. I don't see it as shut up and follow orders, or without the military there can be no success. The military is not a herd of sheep, but a group made up of many levels of leadership, which will defy an order against the people of America, capital America, and I hope you're right, L. Paul. Okay, Chris says, do I think so, by the way? Do I think it's possible? Yes, I think it's possible. You always have
to. Then it's bye-bye Constitution, right?
Yeah.
Really, forever.
Yeah. That's what these things are. Okay, Khan says, on a lighter note, enjoyed Alan's shot from the guns, actually said cannons comment. Somewhere, Sergeant Preston, RCMP, is smiling. Well, King, this case is closed.
Royal Canadian Mounted Police.
I like it. Okay, and Chris says, good morning, panel.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you discuss whether or not Trump's Sally Yates tweet before the hearing started was or was not witness tampering, and if it will be prosecuted? Right. Thanks.
I think there's one aspect of it that's missing on all these things that Trump does that could potentially be a crime, and that is the will to prosecute them. And there is not a will in the Senate to hold him accountable.
Exactly, Michael. So for all those people who keep writing us saying he's in violation of the Emoluments Clause, he's in violation of this, that, remember, you got to have somebody who says, yeah, that's worth prosecuting. That's why these congressional and senatorial elections are going to be very, very important. And I believe that there's a big segment of the American people who have been energized like never before who are going to turn out for these elections. So it's going to be really something. Good morning. I think Alan is wrong about the lax treatment of drunk drivers. At least here in the Hudson Valley, there is a very little tolerance. Yeah? Also, look up dram shop laws. It's against the law in most states to serve alcohol to someone who is visibly intoxicated. We knew that. We said
yeah.
that. Yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, there doesn't have to be a death or even injury for the case to a case to be filed. I agree. I'm telling you now, people do not. If you go into a liquor store and you shoot the clerk, and you murder them, you're going to jail probably forever. If you go into a liquor store, walk out with the bottle, glug, 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 and then, you know, you drive and kill somebody, you're not going to jail for the rest of your life. That's that simple. And that is wrong.
All right. Silence.
And if it's your kid, you'll know how wrong it is.
Ray, do you know what to do for a minute and 30 seconds?
Punt.
You could do something from the fun drive to remind people it's coming up.
When is the fun drive, Old Sport?
Oh, it's over. It's early. It's in early June.
Oh,
it's,
I see.
I believe it would be June 5th.
June 5th.
It would be June 5th.
And oh, that's great. I'm out, now you're doing this again?
You and me.
Okay.
We'll be sitting there, and I'll say to you, who will carry the mail to Red Gulch?
Yeah, I got to look at my script for that, but we'll be there on June 5th, and we hope everyone joins us and everything.
All right.
I will.
With that, we're out of time, and I thank everyone for taking part in our program.
If anybody's left.
Alan, thank you very much. Ray Graff, thank you for filling in at the last minute. Yeah. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you.
Let me reiterate, it was at the last minute. And
literally
Rosemary,
last minute.
It's on you.
But it's always fun when you're part of the panel.
Thanks, Mikey.
Mike, we'll see you on Thursday.
Right, coming to my place.
That's right. We'll be at the Times Union, the Hearst Media Center in Colony. And we're very excited. I love remotes where we don't really have to travel that far.
Yeah.
Glad we could accommodate that.
That's great. So we're right off
Interstate 87.
Say hi to Mr. Yes. Hearst for us.
Is there a good, is there a good Jewish delicatessen up there on that strip?
On Wolf Road?
Yeah.
I'm unaware of where.
There's an Arby's.
There's a good... not too far from there, up on Route 7, though, is a little new satellite edition of Gershon's.
Oh, really?
It's great. Yeah, it's up on the Plaza 7 Galleria.
Get the chopped liver, man. Corner from... You've had Gershon's chopped liver, right?
Nope.
Oh, you got to do it.
It's to die for.
I'll buy it for you.
Good night. We'll be back after this.
Good night.